It's 2 o'clock, and this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 13, 2015. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with state and regional news. Grain Belt Express Power Line gets ICC approval. Springfield. The Illinois portion of a $2 billion transmission line project was approved by state regulators Thursday, but it got through on a wire-thin margin. The Illinois Commerce Commission voted 3-2 to approve the more than 200-mile portion of the 780-mile-long Grain Belt Express line that will run through nine Illinois counties. ICC Chairman Brian Sheehan and Commissioners Sherina May Edwards and John Rosales voted in favor, while Commissioners Ann McCabe and Miguel Devalle voted against. The line, which will be used to access wind power harnessed in Kansas, has generated strong opinions, sentiment at numerous public meetings to discuss the project in Central Illinois has often been hostile, especially from affected landowners. But business, labor unions, and consumer advocacy groups have come out strongly in favor of the project, which is billed as funneling $700 million of investment into Illinois and creating 1,500 jobs. The company building the line, Texas-based Clean Line Energy Partners, claims the wind energy sources the Grain Belt Express will tap can cut Illinois wholesale power prices by $750 million in its first 5 years of operation. The ICC approval brings the Grain Belt Express Clean Line one step closer to dramatically increasing the low-cost wind energy available to customers in Missouri and Illinois, said Michael Skelly, president of Clean Line Energy. Construction is due to start in 2017, and power is scheduled to be flowing by 2019. But Grain Belt Express isn't ready to leave the station just yet. The Illinois approval is now added to regulatory approvals from Kansas and Indiana, but a critical last hurdle, the portion of that of the route crossing Missouri before it hits Illinois, is in limbo. Missouri regulators have already turned down one proposed route, and Clean Energy is now getting ready to focus its energies on having another crack at winning approval in the Show Me State in 2016. We're still evaluating all the options we have to get the needed approval in Missouri, said Amy Kurt, a Clean Line manager, and we'll have to make a decision on how to move forward. Kurt said Missouri was obviously make or break for the project, but Clean Line remained confident the merits of the Grain Belt Express will win over hearts and minds. We think this project is too important to Missouri, too important to Illinois, to not pursue, she said. And the approval in Illinois is a very positive step, and we're looking forward to applying this momentum as we move forward in Missouri. The Grain Belt Express in Illinois will pass through Pike, Scott, Greene, Macoupin, Montgomery, Christian, Shelby, Cumberland, and Clark counties. County authorities where the line crosses will be offered compensation worth $7,000 a mile, payable for 20 years. In the case of Shelby County, for example, the annual fee for 40 miles of line would add up to $280,000. Education. Refurbished Sulphur Spring Schoolhouse educating again. Mount Zion. It's the little things that Don Hyland recalls as he looks back to his education. Nearly 70 years have passed since he was one of the last students to graduate from Mount Zion's Sulphur Springs Schoolhouse, but from tossing a ball over the roof and trying to catch it, to how he learned to spell, Hyland remembers them fondly. I never learned on phonics. Instead, I learned to read by sight, said Hyland, who went to school from 1939 to 1974. To this day, I'm a terrible speller. Though the school doors have been closed to students since 1948, past students and the rest of the community will soon be able to go back to school and learn what Sulphur Springs Schoolhouse learn when Sulphur Springs Schoolhouse reopens as a museum this fall. The effort has been ongoing for several years at the village level, as the building was donated back to the community in 2008 by developer Steve Lewis and his wife Cindy, and was moved to Fletcher Park. "It's just a piece of history we did not want to see torn down," said Judy Rossler, director of the village's Parks and Recreation Department. Work to restore the building to its past glory has been time-consuming. The Mount Zion Public Works Department has given the century-old building a new roof, redone the siding, installed a new hardwood floor, touched up the walls and windows, and made additions to meet Americans with Disabilities Act standards. In addition, Rossler said that they had to reach out for donations of things that would have been part of the everyday life at the school, which includes chalkboards, a teacher's desk, inkwells, and an American flag with 48 stars. "People have been kind so far with their donations," Rossler said, "and some have even surprised her. I had one who was going through boxes in their parents' attic and found chalk slates that you would find in the classroom," she said. "It's amazing what people may have in their homes." But the schoolhouse still has some work left. There are items that officials still hope can be donated or loaned to really make the schoolhouse stand out. Among the items are tin cups, a globe, more slate boards for walls, desks, and oil lamps. Aside from past conversations with those such as Highland, who went to the schoolhouse, officials are hopeful to learn more about the history of the building and the everyday life of students during an open house at 1 p.m. November 17th. It's there that people like Kelly McCord Edwards are excited to delve into the history of the one-room schoolhouse. "We're hoping a lot of people have great ideas about what to bring to the table," said McCourt, the event coordinator at the Mount Zion Convention Center. "I think we're trying to make it come alive and let people know just what it was like in these one-room schools." The schoolhouse has become a passion project for Edwards. Her mother was a student at a one-room schoolhouse, and Edwards remembers the stories she was told about the experience. "It's with that knowledge she has gone to antique stores throughout the state to purchase items to bring the schoolhouse back to its former glory. She has also begun to orchestrate potential future events at the schoolhouse, which will include a Christmas tree lighting on December 5th and will also include a visit from Mrs. Claus to pass out candy at the school. For me, it's a passion. It's an absolute treat to bring that history here," she said. Students from Sulphur Springs, named after the school's original location on a knoll less than a mile southwest of Mount Zion overlooking a spring, said they are excited for the opportunity to see what has been done in the restoration. "I think it's a real honor to have it brought back as a museum," said Jenny Gosnell, who attended Sulphur Springs from 1938 to 1946. "Back then, you could always tell who came from Sulphur Springs. It was really a sense of community honor. Aside from the pride of seeing the school he knew so well became a place of learning for a new generation, Highland said he was excited for the chance to reconnect with other students who came for the open house. "I want to be there and talk to them," he said, "see how their lives have changed." If you go, the Sulphur Springs Schoolhouse will have an open house from 1 to 3:30 p.m. on Tuesday, November 17th. The schoolhouse is at 323 Fletcher Park Boulevard. Illinois settles lawsuit with Clinton Landfill. Springfield, a controversial Central Illinois landfill, will be prohibited from accepting certain kinds of chemical wastes without first obtaining a green light from local governments under a long-awaited settlement unveiled Thursday. In an announcement by Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, Clinton Landfill Incorporated agreed to a consent decree preventing the facility from accepting wastes, such as PCBs, which are found in old electric devices, plastics, some paints, and insulation materials. In addition, the landfill will be banned from taking in manufactured gas plant wastes, which are generated through the remediation of former sites where coal or oil was processed into gas for heating, cooking, and lighting before the introduction of natural gas. Clinton Landfill attempted to evade state law by not seeking local approval to accept certain chemical waste, Madigan said. This action will prohibit the landfill from receiving hazardous waste, and it protects the public's right to be heard before chemicals are accepted by landfills in their neighborhoods. The DeWitt County facility, which is owned by Peoria Disposal, has been working since 2007 to obtain a permit from state and federal agencies to store polychlorinated biphenyl, or PCB, industrial waste. A number of nearby counties and cities joined together to prevent the waste from being stored in the landfill because it sits over the Mahomet Aquifer, which provides drinking water to much of the region. A consent order outlining the regulations was filed Thursday in DeWitt County Circuit Court. In addition to the prohibitions on PCBs and toxic gas waste, Madigan said the company will also be required to comply with state environmental regulations and permits that include the requirement to conduct regular groundwater sampling tests to ensure no harmful contaminants are being released from the landfill while it operates and after it closes. The action comes after Illinois lawmakers and Governor Bruce Rauner worked to approve a new law in the spring barring the dumping of manufactured gas plant wastes at municipal landfills. That measure, sponsored by State Senators Scott Bennett of Champaign and Chapin Rose of Mahomet, is designed to provide another layer of protection to the underground water source serving 800,000 Illinoisans from the Indiana border to Peoria. A representative of Peoria Disposal could not immediately be reached for comment Thursday. County OK's levy increase worries about more cuts. Decatur. An already bleak Macon County Board meeting ended with the potential for further cuts and layoffs in the future. The Board approved a $68.9 million budget for the upcoming fiscal year, which begins December 1st. The budget is more than the $67.1 million budget from last year, with increases coming from contractually required pay raises and growing insurance costs. To cover the costs, the Board also approved an overall tax levy increase of nearly 11%. I apologize to the residents of Macon County, but we don't have many other options, said Board Chairman Kevin Greenfield. The fact is, we've used up the largest part of our surplus. The biggest increase in the levy comes from the general fund, which pays for the basic operation of county departments. While the levy has been kept level in the past 3 years at the $2.78 million, the board approved an increase of $1.21 million. That raises it to $3.99 million. The general fund balance currently has about $5.4 million, nearly $3 million less than the beginning of the budget year, and at its lowest point since 2007. While it is an increase from past years, it is actually down from the $4.08 million levied in 2011. One levy increase the board did provide some optimism was $239,444 levy for veterans assistance, which was up from the $150,000 from last year. It seems like veterans are those always punished in budget time, and we want to provide a chance to create programs to better assist our veterans. While board members expressed regret about the increased tax levy despite many departments cutting their budget by at least 3%, things are expected to get worse in the near future. Finance Committee Chairman Jay Dunn told the board that a continued loss of the county's share from the state and general stagnation of the social equalized assessed value would mean that the board require even more cuts in the coming fiscal year. But with that many departments already cut to the bone, Dunn said layoffs could be the next step. Though discussions are months away, he said a percentage of the roughly 500 current positions would have to be eliminated. I don't like to think about it, but unless someone comes up with a better idea, then I don't know where we go from here, Dunn said. Humane Society Ready's new, larger home. Decatur. In more than 90 years since it was organized in 1923, the Humane Society of Decatur in Macon County has never had a permanent home. For the past 11 and a half years, the Society has made do with 1,600 square feet of space it leased at Northgate Pet Plaza, 2890 North Martin Luther King Drive, Junior Drive. Society President Irene Peterson simply had to quarantine incoming cats and dogs at her house to avoid exposing the population to disease, and sometimes house animals pretty close together rather than turn them away. We cram them wherever we can get them, she said. Starting next week, however, the Humane Society and its four-legged friends will occupy a facility more than three times as large as it prepares to reopen to the public December 1st at the former Nexus Vision Illinois building at 3373 North Woodford Street. Its last day open at Northgate Pet Plaza is Saturday. This has been my dream for the past 15 years, Peterson said. We are very thrilled and proud of this. She said the plan is to complete the dog room outside the dog area and three cat rooms, one for adults, one for kittens younger than 6 months, and the other for cats 6 to 12 months old, this weekend and continue to work on other rooms after the animals have moved in. The maximum capacity will be about 60 cats and 10 dogs. The Humane Society bought the building last month, thanks mostly to a large bequest. Despite materials and labor donated by volunteers and businesses such as Romer Brothers, Air Doctor, General Fence Company, Decatur Fence Company, and HPL Construction, the Society has already spent about $50,000 remodeling the building and needs about $35,000 more to complete the work. Also needed is a used panel van to transport animals for veterinary care. The new facility will also have a quarantine room, all-purpose room, reception area, spacious laundry room, and more. Board member Bruce Baker said the building should have more curb appeal and help the Society complete more adoptions. To find us now, you have to know we're back there, he said. If you go, it's an open house at New Home for the Humane Society of Decatur in Macon County. It's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, December 5th, and it's at 3373 North Woodford Street. For more information, you can visit hsdmc.org. That's HSDMC. I guess that's Humane Society, Decatur, Macon County, .org, or call 217-876-0000. That's 876-0000. Santa arrives at the mall. Santa Claus will arrive Saturday, November 14th at Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth. Free visits with Santa will be available through Christmas at his home in the mall's center court. Hours are 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday and noon to 5 p.m. Sunday. Photo packages will be available for purchase. In addition, the mall is hosting special events for visits with Santa. A breakfast with Santa, sponsored by Dell's Popcorn, will be 10 a.m. Saturday, December 12th, at the tables near Dell's. For reservations, call 217-875-0080. That's 875-0080. pet photos of dogs and cats with Santa will be available from 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesday, December 15th, and Thursday, December 17th. All pets must be on a leash or in a carrier. For more information, go to www.hickorypoint.com. Shelbyville, schools increase tax levy. The Shelbyville School District is looking for almost $200,000 increase in its 2015 property tax levy under a plan approved Monday night by the school board. The 2015 total levy is $4.89 million, up from $4.69 million in 2014. Superintendent Denise Bent said that the new levy represents a 0.8% increase in the consumer price index that governs the tax rate under property tax extension limitations in Shelby County, and 3.45% for an increase in property values, including new property. The levy will be approved at the December board meeting. Shelbyville, disabled hunt scheduled. Recreation areas along Lake Shelbyville will be temporarily closed as the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and Illinois Department of Natural Resources holds a deer hunt for people with disabilities. The hunt will be conducted in portions of recreation areas that are closed for the season. The areas to be closed to all vehicle and pedestrian traffic from 8 p.m. Thursday, November 19th through 7 p.m. Sunday, November 22nd include Lone Point and Lithia Springs campgrounds, Sullivan Beach, Wilborn Creek, Coon Creek, and Possum Creek recreation areas. The closing includes boat ramps with Wilborn Creek, Coon Creek, and Possum Creek recreation areas. Other boat ramps along the lake will remain open. For more information, call Natural Resource Specialist Ashley Flory at 217-774-3951, extension 7005. That's 774-3951, extension 7005. Decatur Turkey Scavenger Hunt. Rock Springs Nature Center will host a free turkey scavenger hunt at 2 p.m. Sunday, November 22nd. Participants will follow clues through the Nature Center to a Thanksgiving-themed prize. Excuse me. The program is free and for all ages. Pre-registration is required by Friday, November 20th at, all one word, MaconCountyConservation.org. Now to the life section of the paper. Mark Skippy Price playing main hanger, Decatur. Mark Price is very proud of Skippy, the character he played in the 1980s popular television show Family Ties. But his life before and after is what makes him a great comedian. Price will be appearing on stage at 6:30 p.m. and 9 p.m. today and Saturday, November 14th, at the Main Hangar Restaurant. 1 hour before each show, a buffet will be served with an opportunity to speak to the comedian. Although Price is known for his portrayal of Michael J. Fox's sidekick in the 1980s sitcom Family Ties, he also has deep comedy ties as the son of comedian Al Burney. The youngster often met professionals in the craft. His friends were Don Rickles, George Burns, Milton Berle, Price said. I got a chance to watch these guys, and what a thrill that was. At 14 years old, Price was given the opportunity to do a stand-up routine on the Merv Griffith Show. The experience was just the beginning of his career. Price has been performing throughout the country for over 25 years, including an opening act for Jay Leno and Jerry Seinfeld. In the past, his shows were controlled by his agent and others in the business. This tour and routine were created by Price, and this is the best one ever, he said. Price will be traveling the Midwest portion of his tour with comedian Wayne Wiskow. Every show is guaranteed to be unique. The two will bring local culture to the stage. And we talk nerdy, Price said. The comedians will do some of their research during the meet and greet opportunity before the shows. Mark will be hanging out just talking with people, said Chris Cooper, Main Hangar Restaurant's general manager. Unlike most comedians, Price himself contacted Cooper to set up the shows. Over several months, the two added more to the weekend event. He wanted to do two more shows, Cooper said, which we normally don't do. Price understands many younger audience members may not know Skippy from his television days, but the comedian is fine with that. I go all over the board because of my influences, he said, and I like to have fun with the audience. If you go, it's comedian Mark Price with Wayne Wiskow. It's 5:30 p.m. buffet with 6:30 show and 8 p.m. buffet with a 9 p.m. show today and Saturday, November 14th. It's at the Main Hangar Restaurant, 910 South Airport Road, Decatur. The cost is $31.95. Reservations may be made at www.mainhangarrestaurant.net. That's mainhangarrestaurant.net. Decatur Underground Theater performing White Christmas. A Christmas classic is headed to Decatur a month ahead of schedule. A Decatur Underground Theater production of Irving Berlin's famous White Christmas debuts tonight for a two-weekend run at the Decatur Civic Center. Though still a month away from the holiday, Susan Rivas said the idea to do the show was an instant hit. We all kind of fell in love with the idea of bringing this show here, said Rivas, director of the show. White Christmas, based on the 1954 movie starring Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye, follows two World War II servicemen who return from the war to become famous Broadway stars. As they head to snowy Vermont, they fall for a pair of singing sisters and come together to save a hotel owned by their beloved former general. While the play deviates some from the movie, Rivas said both share the same basic plot and songs that made the movie a television staple over the past decade. The familiarity is what drew cast members like Tara Russell to the show. It's been my favorite Christmas movie for as long as I can remember, said Russell, who plays one of the two Haynes sisters. It's just a classic story. People can really relate to it. It's the plot that Rivas points to as part of the show's staying power. It's a story of love, but also about people coming together to help others that really makes it special, she said. The story of White Christmas may be simple, but the preparations have been anything but so far. Along with the standard learning of dialogue and songs, cast members have had to take a crash course in various dance moves that go on throughout the show. One of those moments, a scene-stealing tap dance from the cast, has been a fun challenge for Dylan Bethard. No one had ever tap danced before. They had to teach us the step, said Bethard, who plays Phil Davis, the outgoing schemer of the two former service members. As someone who watched Riverdance and other dance shows, it's harder than it looks. Despite not being overly familiar with the source material before he took the role, Bethard said, there is something special about the show that should thrill audience members throughout the runtime. It's so heartwarming that you'll walk out of the theater with a smile on your face, he said. If you go, it's the Decatur Underground Theater's White Christmas. It's at 7 p.m. today, Saturday, November 14th, and Saturday and Sunday, November 20th and 21st, 2 p.m. Sunday, November 15th, and Sunday, November 22nd. It's at the Decatur Civic Center. Tickets are $15 general admission, $10 for seniors over 60, groups of 10, or children 12 and under. Online, check DecaturUnderground.com. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 13th, 2015. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.